Hello, everyone. Welcome to Flaherty's on Films. This week, we're talking about The Dark Knight.
Hit the music. I'm Michael Flaherty.
This is Flaherty's on Films, a podcast where we talk about films.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, what are we talking about this week and what is it about?
This week we're talking about The Dark Knight from 2008, and I'll read the description here provided to us by IMDb. When the menace, known as the Joker, wreaks havoc and chaos on the people of Gotham, Batman must accept one of the greatest psychological and physical tests of his ability to fight injustice.
Really? Because the last movie, he got to sword fight on ice, so... Is this
and he was fighting on a train. He was doing more cool fights. The physical stuff was much cooler in the last film.
I feel like IMDb really fucked this
one up. Yeah, he fucked it up.
So as you at home already know, because if you're listening, you're a big fan. We're doing the new AFI of people who suggested films. And this week was suggested by Michael and John, both my brothers.
Did I suggest this one?
Oh, didn't you? It says so on the list.
Oh.
Anyway, I think it's so funny that you both recommended this and not Batman Begins.
Why is that?
Well, because I feel like a lot of your arguments were like this kind of set off an era of superhero movies.
Why don't you just go ahead and tell me what my arguments were? Because I have no idea.
Isn't that what you said?
Go on. Continue.
Are you being sarcastic or do you really not know what you said?
I really don't know.
I think maybe you also just like this film.
That's probably the number one, is that I enjoyed it.
I think John's will be that. But I just, so why would you pick The Dark Knight and not Batman Begins?
It's just more notable, if I'm thinking now. Batman Begins is a origin story of Batman. And, you know, there's 1,800,000,000 origin stories of superheroes.
You know what made me so mad about Batman v Superman? That they spent any time on Batman's origin story. Like, we fucking know.
In case you don't know, Batman, he's a rich detective slash ninja slash vigilante. He's rich. He's white. Here's the reason why I recommend it. It's because of the Joker. Or, sorry, the menace known as Joker.
I can't believe you would take out the menace known as. That is pretty great.
Now that we know that. Clean, what are your impressions of the film?
Honestly, I remember watching it in theaters long ago and being impressed with the rest of the world with Heath Ledger's performance.
Yeah.
Not loving Aaron Eckhart, but still really liking the film. Upon rewatch and also really scrutinizing the plot, I think I like it less than I used to.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of the same way.
Also scrutinizing the philosophy of Christopher Nolan's world of Batman.
Mm, that sounds like some meaty discussion. But for now, let's go to our first segment. Bam!
Time for Sam. This is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some neat, cool facts about The Dark Knight.
Oh, you want neat and cool facts?
Both,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, damn.
If they're not all about the voice he does, which I remembered he did a voice, but it didn't make me laugh out loud when I watched it this time.
Can you do your Rachel impression?
Wait, are you talking about Aaron Eckhart?
No, I'm talking about Batman when he does his.
Oh.
I'm Batman. Oh, that was so bad.
But when he does
you edit that out?
Sure, I'll edit that out.
No, you won't.
He does the Rachel!
Rachel!
Though that's Aaron Eckhart.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they both do it, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's just a man thing, you know.
Yeah, it's a dude thing. It's what guys are like.
Like, we don't get it, but Michael
we don't understand.
Pass me a beer. Continue the facts.
In 2015, Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins was released. And it would
2005?
2005. Oh, my God. Why am I thinking 2015? Sorry. 2005. Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins was released, and it was a new take on the Batman franchise that tried to make the superhero more gritty and realistic. After the film's success, Nolan started thinking more about the franchise, and one character really stuck out to him. What would a realistic, not humorous or silly Joker look like? The Joker was already a pretty established character, most famously portrayed by Jack Nicholson in Tim Burton's 1989 Batman film. However, this Joker was going to be getting a more psychologically crazy approach. Nolan and his brother found inspiration in Joker's first appearance in the original comic books and a crime movie about an asylum patient who escapes only to wreak havoc on the world.
Ooh.
The brothers weren't interested in telling the Joker's story, however. To quote Nolan, "The Joker we met in The Dark Knight is fully formed. To me, the Joker is an absolute. There are no shades of gray to him. Maybe shades of purple."
Oh,
nice.
"He's unbelievably absolute. He's unbelievably dark. He bursts in just as he did in the comics. We never wanted to do an origin story for the Joker in this film. The arc of the story is much more Harvey Dent's. The Joker is presented as an absolute. It's a very thrilling element in this film and a very important element that we didn't want to deal with the rise of the Joker. We wanted to deal with the rise of the Joker, not the origin of the Joker."
I really like that. I actually agree with that. Mm-hmm. I really wonder what Christopher Nolan thinks about the Joaquin Phoenix Joker film, but because that spits in the face of all of that.
It was discussed having the Joker have kind of an emotional journey at first, but eventually they decided that the Joker as a character would not learn or grow from anything in this movie. So Harvey Dent was added to the film to provide the heart and the emotional backbone of the film. You can't have a character or an antagonist just be the same throughout the film. There's no growth there.
They can. Jafar doesn't grow. I mean, it's usually the protagonist who grows.
Do you not remember The Return of Jafar?
No, I do not.
Isn't he the same either. In that?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that.
Yeah, you're trying to trick me.
It didn't work.
Using my Return of Jafar weakness, like always.
So it's pretty clear that this film's main focus was on the Joker. So who do you bring in to take an infamous character and present a whole new look to it? Most people were surprised with the answer, Heath Ledger. At the time, Ledger was most famous for his role in Brokeback Mountain. So, slightly different character.
And 10 Things I Hate About You.
He had just been nominated for an Academy Award for Brokeback Mountain. So.
He should have been nominated for.
I don't disagree. Those leather pants.
For his
amazing.
That dreamy smile.
Oof. So
those
great.
Eyes that twinkle. Anyway, go on.
In a film.
Michael, did you want to say something about how cute Heath Ledger was?
Hot.
Thank you. Go on, Sam.
In a film starring Christian Bale, Michael Caine, and Gary Oldman, Ledger was not quite at the A-lister level. However, his performance as the Joker has been deemed one of the best and is honestly one of the best parts of this film. So let's chat a little bit about Heath. Ledger was chosen by Nolan, who had met the actor only a few times. The reason he decided on Ledger was because when he was discussing his take on the Joker, Ledger really seemed to understand the psychology behind who the Joker was, and that's why he got the role.
Okay.
Mm.
Ledger would dive headfirst into the role and would stay for 6 weeks in a motel room before filming began. He immersed himself in seclusion and dived deeper and deeper into his character. He worked on the Joker's voice, laugh, and mannerisms. He would keep a journal chronicling all of his Joker thoughts. Although
it's a funny phrase, I'm sorry.
Joker thoughts.
Go ahead.
Although rumors would circulate that playing the Joker made Ledger go crazy, he would be quoted saying, "Joker so far is definitely the most fun I've had with any character. He's just out of control. He has no empathy. He's a sociopath, a psychotic clown, and I just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it."
I remember reading about this method acting stuff he was doing, but there is kind of a sad element of that where he was with his wife, Michelle Williams, who had very young children at the time. And he just shut himself away for like months at a time.
They weren't married. They weren't together anymore.
Oh, they weren't together. Well, still he had young children.
He had a daughter.
Okay.
Her name's Matilda. Actually, when he's the nurse in the hospital that you'll be talking about, his character, his nurse badge says Matilda. That's after his daughter.
Hmm. Cool.
So yes, he did have a daughter at the time. You are correct.
Okay. I think I was still
he and
there.
Michelle had broken up already, though.
Well, look at who knows all the celebrity gossip.
It's like I researched or something for this.
All right, fine.
So Ledger also had some part in creating the look of the Joker. He would pull inspiration from the punk rocker Sid Vicious and Malcolm McDowell's character Alex from Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
Also, one of the more important aspects of the Joker is his scars on his face that create the constant smile. to create those, they thought about kind of skinheads and punks. And there was a term that kept coming up called the Glasgow or the Chelsea smile. It's actually a kind of cut that some gang members would give other people.
Hmm.
I think it's like a football club thing.
Oh.
How they would, yeah, take a, because like, that's how I learned the verb to bottle somebody, is to use a bottle as a weapon. But then, yeah, if you break the bottle into a shard of glass and then put it in their mouth and then,
yeah.
Not like put someone in a big glass bottle, like there's a ship inside too.
No, no,
and
not
they,
like
and
that.
And they are on the ship pretending to be a captain.
How would one do that, Michael?
I've not, I'll figure it out. Please continue, Samantha.
Needless to say, once Ledger started coming out, people were just blown away. And Nolan would always like preface it when they were walking through by saying, Heath is working on something and coming up with it, and it's really great. And all the actors that he worked with were just blown away by his performances. He was so impressive and really so encapsulated the character that Nolan had envisioned that Nolan allowed him to direct the two homemade videos that the Joker sends to the GNC or GCN. The first photo with the fake Batman,
so creepy,
was written, produced, and directed by Ledger, but with Nolan's supervision. Then he thought such a great job that he let him completely have control over the second video.
I just want to note that they only separated 5 months before he died. Now, I don't know a lot about the Dark Knight scheduling, so maybe that's still correct.
Okay, well, let's do some math here.
But anyway, sorry, because he did die like before the movie came out, so you might still be right.
Doesn't matter.
It matters to me, Michael.
Doesn't matter. Please continue.
So the Dark Knight was primarily filmed in Chicago.
I don't know why I...
That was a big concern to Colleen.
Sam was really annoyed with me because I was just like, that's Chicago! Is that Chicago?
And make sure you look up and see if it's Chicago. It's Chicago.
It was Chicago. Thank you, Sam.
Cool. But they also filmed in the United Kingdom and Hong Kong as well.
Oh, sure.
So one of the big things about this film, besides the Joker, and you could argue, because I'm also kind of looking for reasons why this should have been on the AFI list.
Sure.
So, not only is the Joker just super impressive in general, another thing this film has going for it is it marks the first time that a feature film has even partially been shot in IMAX.
Really? That's yes. So interesting.
So IMAX cameras have been around for a long time.
But you just go see 3D nature shows.
Yeah, they've been primarily used today for... Yeah, documentaries, mostly nature shots. And a main reason why they aren't used for films is they only can really hold 30 seconds to 2 minutes of film per shot. They're really heavy, they're clunky, and they're really loud, so it's hard to really capture dialogue while using them. So they're just inconvenient. However, Nolan has always wanted to use an IMAX or a complete film in IMAX, and so he got to use it for 4 scenes. Basically, just like the big opening scene, the big car scene, and like the scenes that weren't super dialogue heavy.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, even though that's all really cool, while filming the chase scene with the Joker and the SWAT team vans, one of only 4 IMAX cameras in the world was destroyed.
Now that you're saying that, I do remember this being a really big deal that they filmed some of it on IMAX.
It was also a big deal at the time just because it was like the explosion of 3D movies. And it was like the one film where you couldn't see it in 3D. And people were like, actually, that's fine because I don't want to see another 3D film.
So there's a cameo I would like to mention because he's seen in a lot of Batman movies. So when the Jokers and goons crash Wayne's fundraising party, one man says that, you know, we're not intimidated by thugs. This was Patrick Leahy, the Democratic U.S. Senator from Vermont.
Oh.
He is a lifelong comic book fan, and he has appeared in 5 Batman films.
That is crazy.
Oh, that's cute.
I thought you were going to say what's-his-face, Adam West, but I guess he has a pretty weird relationship with the Batman franchise.
Yeah.
Or used to. Sorry. May he rest.
So another big thing that this movie has going for it besides the Joker and the IMAX is this was one of the first viral movie promotions.
Sure.
So they did a special website that was supposed to be like all promoting, hey, vote for Harvey Dent. And then the website was kind of taken over by the...
Ooh, creepy Joker.
By the Joker. Oh, and no. Like a lot of art so serious.
He's so chaotic with this website.
Huh? All right, Michael, give him some credit.
So they would actually...
A lot of people work very hard on this. And
they
were very
would
successful.
Hand out flyers for Harvey Dent that would lead you to this website. And then it was kind of like all taken over and all these things.
So why
this was...
so internet?
So this was the first real use of the internet to promote a movie. So
that's very cool.
So the before the
that's
movie
silly.
Was released,
that's my stance on it.
It worked. Who cares?
I love silly. I love it. I love stupid things.
You're sounding snarky.
Yeah.
Before the movie was released, unfortunately, Heath Ledger did pass away on January 22nd, 2008, at his home in Manhattan.
It's very sad.
It was due to an accidental overdose of or accidental mixture of different pharmaceutical drugs that he had been taking. He did have some insomnia. There has been some talks about how it's related to the role. However,
right. I feel like a lot of people felt kind of icky because when he died, it kind of did help the movie a lot. And people like a lot of the film people talking about promoting it were like, you know, he died for this role because he was so psychologically damaged.
Batman
that
got
felt,
him.
I felt really gross.
Yeah, it's not great. The movie was dedicated to him and also to a stuntman who died during the making of this film.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was driving one of the cars and it crashed and he died. So The movie was dedicated to the two of them.
Damn.
So other fun fact, just to make it a little happier, though, I am going to talk about the car now. That Batmobile car motorcycle thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was so near impossible to drive that only one person in the entire, like, everyone they tried could actually ride it. It was just super awkward.
It does look awkward. That makes
That's
sense.
Funny.
So every time you see actually like Christian Bale on it acting, it's like stationary and being held.
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he could not. So that was just a side. So the movie was released and it was an instant hit. It is the most successful of the three and it was the first comic book movie ever to reach $1 billion worldwide.
Which... I think that alone is the best reason for it to be on the AFI.
Because all you care about is money?
No, because that clearly started the world we live in now of just being flooded with comic book movies. Of comic book movies being the obvious blockbuster of the year was not a thing before The Dark Knight.
Yeah, it was. No. Spider-Man came out before this one.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we should do Spider-Man.
And Batman.
We definitely should do Spider-Man.
We're going to cut this off. We're actually going to do Spider-Man instead. Sorry, folks.
Yeah.
It was the highest grossing film of 2008 and the 45th highest grossing film of all times adjusted for inflation. It also set the record of the highest grossing domestic opening with $158 million. And it's a record that it held on for 3 years.
Damn. That's crazy. Damn. And just to mention what a different time this was, if you all remember from our WALL-E podcast, this was the highest grossing film in 2008. Iron Man was 8.
Yeah.
So
that's fun.
That is fun.
This film was nominated for 8 Academy Awards. And your question of the week, how many did it win?
Sorry, how many was nominated for again?
8.
I have a guess. I'm going to say 0.
I'm going to say 1 because I know Heath Ledger did win.
It won 2.
Oh, okay. Obviously Heath Ledger, yeah.
So Heath Ledger did posthumously win Best Actor in a supporting role for this mark.
And what asshole's not going to vote for him? Jeez.
It made history as well because it was the first time an Academy Award had been awarded in a major category to a comic book movie.
Sure.
That's, again, another good AFI one.
Yeah.
Although I don't think the Avengers has won anything.
It's actually still the only Academy Award that a comic book movie has won in a major category. Okay. So,
ooh, we're going to see if Joaquin Phoenix wins. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So the other one that it did
win another Joker
is Best Sound Editing. And then the ones that was nominated for but did not win were Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Sound Mixing, Best Visual Effects, Best Makeup, and Best Film Editing.
I think it's okay they didn't win those. I mean, they did an okay job, but were they that great?
I would have to see all the other films.
That's true. Let's go watch all the other films from 2008. We'll
That's a good idea to do.
And then talk about Spider-Man.
And we're back. Yeah, I shouldn't have won.
No. A lot of great films that year. Yeah. All right, go on, Sam.
Yeah, we saw them all.
Those are all my facts for you today. Oh, unless you want one more fact, Jack Nicholson was very offended that he was not asked to be in this film.
Oh.
In case anyone...
And then when he saw the film, what did he say?
He didn't respond. He just said it was like something like, this is my favorite, was because he said, I was offended they didn't even ask me to be in the Joker sequel. And it's like, this is not a sequel to your movie.
I don't think he knows how films work.
Yeah. Well, he was
Which is so weird given his profession.
Right. When this movie came out, he was like 71 and he's like, God damn it. Like,
is he alive still?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Oh, all right.
Though when I was typing in, when did Jack Nicholson play the Joker? The first thing that popped up was, when did Jack Nicholson die?
Oh,
yeah. He did not die. He's still alive.
Like, never. He's alive. Good job.
And all that was
Bam.
Time for Sam.
Great segment.
Really great segment. Yeah, I think it's fun thinking about the development of this because, again, this is kind of how we think of Superman movies. Or, sorry, not Superman. Superhero movies.
I only call them Superman movies. That's fun.
But they're like, even the more fun ones now are still a little more grounded. But, like, a lot of movies were made in...
I don't consider Endgame to be like, oh, what a grounded movie. Because also,
technically,
the thing about Christopher Nolan is he's, like, really anti-CGI, too. So that also, I think, gives it a more grounded feel.
Yeah, definitely.
And to me, I just, like, that's the opposite of Endgame. Where it's, like, very...
I was thinking more emotionally grounded. Like, in characters you care about that have been fleshed out for you.
Spider-Man 2 came out before Batman. And Spider-Man 2 is very emotional. We won't tell anybody, mister.
Aw, this is New York City. Is that in the movie?
You messed with one of us, you messed with all of us. These are very emotional films.
Because we had just watched that one.
We just saw all these recently.
But anyway, like, Batman was the movies that they made most of. I know they did the Superman films, but and they did it in, like, so the first serialization of was the 60s cartoon, which was very silly. So even the more dark ones, like the Tim Burton one, were still pretty campy. So this is a very different take. Pretty radical.
It spawned a generation of gritty comic book movies with the Zack Snyder shit. But
I
think they're lighthearted now.
But they still are different, right? They're still different from a campy, silly movie. Okay, anyway, let's go to our next segment, Critics Corner, where we hear what the critics have to say. I will start. You will feel utterly numb after the screening of The Dark Knight. Yeah. The film is bleak and brilliant, says James Christopher of The Times UK.
All right, here we go. This is from Velvet Fairy. This is from Amazon. How can there be so many good reviews for this movie? This movie felt like a robot or a machine directed it. There was no humanity, no characters to connect to. Kind of agree with that one. Just a lot of pyrotechnic displays and car chases. Boring, worthless movie. The first two movies with Michael Keaton as Batman were much more entertaining and human. This movie was cold, clinical, and heartless.
He's shouting because it's an all cast.
So if you like those kind of movies, then you will love this.
You know what's funny? That didn't actually bother me that much that there weren't characters to connect with. But after I read that, I'm like, yeah, that's a really good point.
It's pretty true, actually.
Yeah. The Dark Knight is probably the smartest and most stylish action movie since The Matrix. It thinks and it philosophizes. Oh. We will get into that. Oh. The subject it thinks and philosophizes about, perhaps not surprisingly, considering the times, is the Iraq War.
What?
Okay, says Timothy Mangan of the Orange County Register. Interesting.
Who's the Amazon and who's the professionals here? all right, here we go. This is from Jeff's Date. Yeah, okay. Ledger and Bale were both good, and I always liked Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman. Frankly, though, I like Jack Nicholson's Joker better, mainly because he really did joke and laugh, whereas all Ledger does is kill people. But I agree with what many other people said. This movie is way too long. The plot made no sense. I couldn't understand Gary Oldman.
Pause. Michael complained about that.
All the time. Just a lot. Speak up, man.
And we love Gary Oldman on this podcast. We are pro Oldman.
I'll take him or leave him. And the amount of violence was absolutely ridiculous. The first hour was better than expected, but then it was as if the producer said, wait a minute, I haven't been enough explosions or car chases. And then you get at least 40 minutes of almost nonstop explosions and car chases interspersed with numerous killings. I say at least 40 minutes because we turned it off after 2 hours. Unless you like mindless action and violence and don't give damn about plot, characters, or intelligent movies, skip this.
That is, wow, that was intense.
Yeah.
Said Jeff's date. Ledger's performance alone is good enough to make The Dark Knight a very good movie. But fortunately, this is a film with even more than that, making it not just the best film of the summer, but one of the best films of the year, says Michael Compton, Bowling Green Daily News. Which, you know, there's arguments you made having just watched all the films of 2008, you and I.
Yeah. So
we'll agree with that.
We have come from expertise. There is no... Oh, this is from Tortuga. I don't know why I laughed. There is nothing enticing, thrilling, or challenging about this plot. It is, I, I,
I assume that's supposed to be all.
Oh. It is all about the violence, the explosions, and more violence. Please entertain my human mind. I'm inquisitive, not just my animal mind with shiny lights and sounds. Give me something to think, to ponder, to desire, to look up to. This movie is all a bunch of modern smoke and mirrors that treats me like an idiot monkey. I'm sorry I wasted 2 hours on it.
Wow.
Damn, that's harsh.
There's a bonus review this time around. Okay, this movie's supposed to be about a knight, but instead it's about some crazy guy in a bat suit. Why is he so angry?
Oh, this is a joke.
Why do so many people act like ninjas, yet they aren't ninjas? I like Morgan Freeman better as a hippie Lego man ghost, says Jonathan.
He's doing a joke. I like him. That was Chris Corner.
All right. Very good. Let's go to our favorite part, least favorite part.
Colleen, what's your least? Well, let's do our favorite parts first, actually. I think those are more obvious.
So obvious. I mean, like, I was kind of wondering when rewatching this if they were like, oh, Heath Ledger is so overrated.
Yeah,
because
like, oh,
he
he's so good. Sure.
Oh, but he's really fucking good. He was so, every single scene he's in is compelling and amazing. And like,
so good.
And I was like, I was prepared to be cynical and downplay it. And no, he is hands down the
so
best part of the movie.
So captivating. Some of these earlier reviews were like, oh, he's not even funny, like Jack Nicholson. I think he is, like,
yeah,
he's obviously creepy and crazy and he kills people and he's violent and he's psychotic and whatever, but he is fun too. Like,
you do laugh.
You do laugh.
Despite yourself.
When he's like, what, you think you could steal from us and walk away? Yeah. Like, I do enjoy it.
Oh, God, he's so good.
Absolutely. And he's so, like I've said this to you, I don't see Heath Ledger. I know exactly what Heath Ledger looks like. It doesn't look like this guy.
Even that one scene for a second when he has no makeup on, you barely see it even.
And his voice, like, who is that? That's not what he sounds like.
You know what? Almost a criticism I have is, like, Christian Bale, I know, is a very good actor. I've seen him in a lot of stuff. And when he plays opposite Heath Ledger, it's like, I don't feel like they're playing the same game. You know what I'm saying? And I get Christian's just doing his Batman thing, but like, he is not in the same league when they're together.
I kind of like it because they're very opposite. Because I feel
for sure.
Christian Bale is kind of like, oh, I'm serious, I'm Batman. And that is the good opposition to just the crazy, fun Joker.
I think one of my one-star reviews that I didn't put in here was like, why is everyone treating Batman like he's a dumb jock? Like, they have to explain everything to him and he's just a meathead. I'm like, it does feel that way a bit more than in the last film,
yeah,
which I don't remember that well. So maybe
what's your least favorite part of this film?
So I think I actually agree with that one guy who was like, the first half was much better than the last half, but not because of the shiny objects, because I like those. I like the explosions
action,
and the car chases. But it's dumb. It gets real dumb. The Two-Face stuff is ridiculous. And I think Aaron Eckhart is a fine actor. And I think they could have done something more interesting with it, but felt like they were kind of rushed to their ultimate conclusion. And then that stupid bit where we're going to go into where Gordon has to like die for a bit, but not really. I don't know. And then my other least favorite part, and I'll try to keep this short, but I just feel like the whole worldview of Nolan's Batman is really bad, like actually really destructive, and has aged a lot worse in this era. So the beginning of the film, they're like, Gotham's criminals are running scared because Gotham is just this hellscape of criminal activity.
Yeah.
And it totally reinforces this very idea of like, if you're scared all the time as a criminal living in a police state of possibly being roughed up by a vigilante, that's the best possible outcome, right? Like, this is how we really combat crime. And it's like, that's the best thing billionaire Bruce Wayne could do to combat this horrifying citywide systemic problem. And it's so stupid. And I know you're like, guys, this is a comic book movie. Shut up, Colleen. But we do really get a lot of our values from this. And I think, like, you know, as silly and fun and campy as the Avengers films are, they actually talk about real issues in a more interesting, palatable, and better way, that like about stuff like oversight versus, you know, doing the right thing and what government oversight really looks like. And that's a more interesting conversation to me than the stuff they try to cram in here with the stupid fairy problem and the like, oh, it's okay if we look at everyone's cell phone signal to see where everyone is at any given time because we're good guys and we're gonna do
it
right.
Bad.
Right. But I'm saying they do it in such a clumsy way where like, where Morgan's like, this is really bad. It's fascism. And he's like, it's okay. We're going to use it this one time. He's like, got it.
Justice wants.
Right. Well, isn't it just like this idea that it's okay because Christopher, or not Christopher, because Bruce Wayne is just that good a guy. Vigilantism is bad unless you're this amazing ninja powered billionaire. Then it's fine because you're smarter than other people and better than the system.
Well, I'm just trying to think, like, I 100% agree. If you're looking at the movie through that perspective, then you're going to feel very negatively. I'm just trying to think of, if you're trying to seriously engage with the movie, how much do you have to be looking at the movie through that perspective? And I think the answer is quite a lot, right? Because the very end, it's very clear that the conflict of the movie is Gotham's soul.
Exactly.
And, like, I don't even know what that means.
Well, so, yeah.
Like, I live in Madison. Like, am I affected by Madison's soul? Like, I don't, like, what is this even?
I don't know.
Mean?
If you shut down all the bars tomorrow, you would probably change the nature of
would
Madison's soul.
Would their city's soul be different? Like, it's such a bizarre concept.
Well, I guess that's my problem when I was like, Colleen, you're being silly about it. But this movie is trying to be deep and philosophical and talk about what it is to make a city better and what it is to make people good. So, like, the movie's asking me to do this, so I have to approach it critically, I think, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the description of it is, you know, the psychological torment of Batman and its people.
Yeah. My only defense, and this is a terrible defense, is that, like, you have to have this bad childlike view of what a city is in order to justify the story existing.
Sure.
And I do like parts of the story, even like, but only when you think of it non-critically.
Sure.
So
for instance,
so like the Joker exists and he doesn't make any sense. He does all these things that shouldn't be possible
because he's magic.
Like, oh, I don't have a plan, I just do things, and for some reason I'm very successful at doing lots of different things in very powerful ways.
I don't care about money, but do things that clearly require a lot of money.
Like, that doesn't make sense. But it's not like you can write, you can't write it slightly differently and, oh, it does make sense, and the city thing all makes sense, and the politics are good. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You have to just tell a completely different story. Right. So it's like, I agree with you, but also I do kind of like a part of this movie, and it's like, that's the only way it could exist.
Sure, and I agree with you a lot on that, because I did really enjoy watching this movie.
Yeah.
Also, I think I'm a little clouded. This is not going to be... I watched the next film when we lived in New York while the Occupy Wall Street was going on. And that whole, like, Nolan thesis of, like, police state good is really reinforced in that. And don't go after rich people because they're not the problem is also a kind of a big deal in that movie.
Yeah,
in a bad way.
Well.
So yeah, this movie isn't as bad as that movie, both in philosophy and as a movie.
So my least favorite part actually kind of follows like my second favorite part. One of my favorite scenes is the interview scene where Batman and Joker are in the jail cell, and just very, very intense. You just get like some of the best Joker stuff, and their chemistry together, I thought, is very, very good.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite line in the film is Batman is frustrated with the Joker and he's beating him up. He's just punching him in the face and over again. And Joker just laughs. He's like, this is nothing. Like, I can take this. I'm a psychotic criminal. You have nothing to threaten me with. And I just really love that idea for a superhero film. Like, you could show Batman has all the money, he has all the strength, he has all the things, but he's powerless because this guy is so chaotic.
He doesn't care about his life.
That's such an awesome idea that I felt like doesn't really... Because immediately after, Joker's like, but I will tell you where they are. And then the plot just keeps going, and I feel like that idea does not get its due.
I think, well, it's very clear they wanted to do another movie with him. So maybe that never...
Still,
that was supposed to pay off in another film.
I don't like that just because this is the Joker film.
Sure.
And I feel like even they thought that.
You don't think it paid off at the end when he's like holding him off the building and Joker's like, just kill me already, you dummy. And like, boy, the world would be safer if you've just killed me. And he thinks it's very funny. I feel like it does kind of come back.
Kind of. My thought is like, oh, I can't fight you with my strength. Like, what am I really trying to achieve? I don't know what Batman ultimately does achieve. Or like how he learns from this interaction that I think is a very good interaction.
I thought you were going to mention the interrogation scene where Gary Oldman lets Batman into the room, and then he's like, but Batman's beating him up! We have to get in there! It's like, what did you fucking think was going to happen?
No, I got it. So I was like, oh. Just
oh, so now Commissioner Gordon cares about fucking rules?
Yeah, it's a little silly. So that's my least favorite part of the film.
All right, why don't we just go right into summary, because it is long.
Oh, boy.
So stay tuned, folks.
Oh, yikes. Yeah, buckle in. All right. Do you want me to start?
Go for it.
Masked men are seen staging a bank heist in broad daylight. This is a very cool scene.
It is such a good... Honestly, if the movie were just judging the opening, A+.
This probably doesn't any sense, but you could tell it's IMAX. Like, even though we saw it on a small screen, obviously, we saw it on a normal television. Just like the way it's shot, like, it seems very just big in scope. Mm. As each criminal finishes the assigned task, he is killed by one of his partners until only the Joker is left. Also, just a great way to... do exposition, because it was a fun action scene, but they kept saying, oh, this Joker guy, he's robbing a mob bank. That's really weird. Oh, you're a criminal with no code. Like, all this information is got in a very fun
scene. And it
was
more natural than Mikey's make it seem, if you haven't seen
it. I'm saying that's all the information spread across very smoothly. That night, we find Lieutenant Gordon on the Gotham Police Department roof manning the bat signal. He comments that Batman doesn't show up most times, hopefully because he's busy. Because they like to reinforce that the police will just, or Batman, the authority, will just beat you up if you're a criminal with no, due process.
Yeah, due process is silly. Also, the idea that, like, Batman is a wanted criminal, but he can just have this big, bright bat signal on top of the police department. It's like, there really are no rules in Gotham, man.
I'm kind of a lefty. I'd definitely be protesting that.
Out in the terribleness that is Gotham City, the Scarecrow is selling fear-based hallucinogenics to the Russian mob, but they're interrupted by a small army of Batman wannabes. It doesn't go well for them until Batman comes to save the day.
Maybe I don't like the realism, because I remember in Batman Begins, the city felt like dirtier and like grosser.
And a little more fictional.
And this just looks like a real-ass city. It just looks like Chicago. Like,
it's so much worse than the next movie when it's so clearly New York City.
But I feel like I'll just go to Chicago and I'm like, oh, I'm feeling the soul of this. Like, it felt more cartoonish a little bit in Batman Begins. But
in a good way.
But still had the, you know, grittiness and whatever.
Totally.
Did you read the whole paragraph?
Mm-hmm.
Cut to Bruce and Alfred in some helpful expositional dialogue. Bruce's ex, Rachel, not Katie Holmes, is working and dating the city's new district attorney, Harvey Dent, played by Aaron Eckhart. Over in the courthouse, Harvey and Rachel cross-examine a mob goon who tries to shoot him mid-sentence. The gun jams, and Harvey knocks him flat with one mighty blow, which Rachel thinks is totally no big deal.
Dude, they're walking out, and Harvey's just like, Rachel's just talking about, like, oh, we got him running scared. He's like, and I'm fine, thanks. And she goes, Harvey, if no one's trying to kill you, you're not doing your job.
Right.
And I'm like... Jesus Christ, he's allowed to be traumatized by the fact that someone would have murdered him if the gun hadn't jammed.
They cut the scene where she goes, be a man! And he's like crying. He's like, okay, honey.
Now a fun board of directors scene where Lucius Fox, played by Morgan Freeman, talks to the board at Wayne Enterprises about a deal. Mr. Lau, remember him for later.
Mm-hmm.
Harvey and Rachel are at a fancy dinner when Bruce shows up to crash their date with a Russian ballerina. The four discuss Batman, vigilante or hero. And I feel like the district attorney is realistically pro-vigilante.
Yeah, I mean...
shouldn't he believe in the system?
That's not a real discussion.
No.
I mean, they live in a world where Batman, like a vigilante, could just be Batman, where he's like the best guy and he could do anything. You know, a vigilante in real life is just a guy with a gun.
Right.
So it's like, don't have the guy with a gun. That's my hot take.
Cool.
Later, the leaders of Gotham's underworld attend a meeting, great scene, to discuss really what to do about this Batman character. Mr. Lau joins them by closed-circuit TV, assuring them that their money is safe with him in Hong Kong. The Joker interrupts their meeting, doing a magic pencil trick, then offering to kill Batman for half of everything the mob has. They don't go for it yet.
That pencil bit was... I just remember seeing that in theaters and being like, fucking whoa. And then, of course, we had to hear about it for the next year. But
Joker's whole like introduction is so like it's awkward too.
Yeah.
It's like so many things.
It's surprising. It's yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but like I feel like every time someone's the Joker, they're like, "Oh, I really delved into the craziness." But Joker does just like talk like a normal person a lot of the time.
For sure. But still unsettling. It's like a normal person that's a
right.
bit off.
It borders on just being absolutely crazy with being normal.
Harvey stands on the rooftop with a bat signal as Batman and Gordon appear. Lau managed to flee to China, well, to Hong Kong, a country that will not extradite a national. Harvey and Gordon argue a bit, and Batman defuses it by offering to get Lau for them if Harvey honestly thinks he can put Lau in prison. Batman just goes to Hong Kong and gets him because, you know, fuck international law. So they get him. They're going to take down to the underworld with RICO laws. Which is how you persecute the mob. So I don't know why. Sorry. There's a scene where Maggie Gyllenhaal is like, we're going to get him with RICO. And it's like, yeah, they're lawyers. RICO is a really commonly known thing. Even an idiot like me knows what RICO is. So,
well, I only know because of like television shows.
Exactly.
Because like damages, you know.
or so The Sopranos. Like,
oh, right.
So I just thought it was so funny. Like, I have an idea.
Wait a minute.
Here's how we're going to get the mob.
Wait, Harvey, have you seen The Sopranos? Anyway. Which, where are we at?
The mob.
The mob comes around and decides to hire the Joker. When Mayor Garcia meets with Harvey, a copycat Batman hanged by the noose hits the window. Bruce and Alfred watch in horror along with the rest of Gotham as a tape airs showing the Joker torturing and killing the copycat. He threatens to keep killing people until Batman reveals his identity.
You know what? So I feel like I'm a little mad that this whole movie is about like the goodness of people and the soul of Gotham. Because like if they had really pared down this movie, it could have been so much better. Like, I feel like they tried to do too much.
Yeah.
And if it was just a sort of Batman versus this Joker character.
You know what just occurred to me?
What?
This is a good fucking plan.
if you're trying
to kill the Joker or try to kill the Batman as the Joker, this is a great way to do it. Well, I mean, I feel like if I was dumb, I would just sort of like mob the troops like, okay, Batman, where are you? He's like, no. He's a good guy. He's a superhero and he has a secret identity. Like, this is a good plan.
Well, but why wouldn't anybody just do that?
That's what I'm saying.
That's why you're not supposed to give in to terrorist demands, because like then anybody would just do that.
But I mean, at some point you're going to give in, right? You don't want people to die.
Yes.
Just saying, for somebody who doesn't have plans, quote unquote.
He has really great plans.
That's a pretty good plan. I'm impressed.
Cut to a fundraiser for Harvey, where Bruce arrives by helicopter. Gordon finds out the Joker is targeting Judge Cirillo, Commissioner Loeb, and his See, this is what I mean. They're just like doing too many things. They try to secure their safety. Cirillo's car blows up. Commissioner Loeb drinks from a poison glass, and the Joker crashes the fundraiser all at the same time. Why are they doing all these extra things?
Because they're showing just how crazy the Joker is.
And really good at executing a tight-knit plan.
Yeah, he's really good at plans. The Joker torments Bruce's guests, and Bruce slips off to do who knows what.
Remember when Maggie Gyllenhaal was like, hey, stop it. And then she's like surprised when the Joker just comes at her. Like, what was her plan?
What an idiot. Joker delivers a second monologue about his scars until Batman shows up and throws Rachel's out a window, but she's
fine. Sorry. The Joker throws Rachel out a window.
Oh, yeah. Joker!
The Joker.
It's a weird scene because Joker throws Maggie Gyllenhaal out the window. Batman's like, I'll save you. So he just jumps out the window. They both land on a car, which, like, oh, good, the car was there to protect their fall from a skyscraper. And then they're fine. Like, the Joker is still up there. That shouldn't have gone well in any regard.
No. But Joker has magic powers, so it's fine.
Basically, which I like.
Alfred and Bruce discuss the Joker, with Alfred opining that the Joker couldn't care less about
Is opining
normal,
a word?
Sure is.
Okay.
Normal bad guy things like money and power, which is actually a pretty good dialogue. Monologue. I know people quote it a lot now, but some men just want to watch the world burn.
That was really good.
Yep. I mean, Michael Caine is just a dope actor. We can all agree.
Very good.
Gordon bursts into a tenement where the bodies of two Joker victims lie decomposing. Batman investigates. Batman just comes in and is like, leave it for a minute. And he's like, yeah, cool. I'm here now. While Gordon discovers the Joker's next target is Mayor Garcia.
Whoa. At an outdoor vent, the Joker fire at the mayor.
Sorry.
The Joker fires at the mayor, only for Gordon to leap out in front of the bullet and die. Batman crashes Maroni's club and pummels a large private security force before tossing Maroni himself off the roof.
Too many things!
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Harvey does some questioning of his own, flipping a coin to intimidate his apprehended gunman and threatening to kill the man if Tails comes up. Batman appears and is not happy with Harvey doing some sort of thing that he himself has done all the time. I do like the grittiness of this movie a little bit, but there's some times where it gets a little silly and that makes me laugh. Batman's like, you're the light of Gotham!
That was really good.
You're the shining star that we all need.
So, yeah, I guess I almost wish Aaron Eckhart was in this movie, who is a fine actor. But, the whole we need at least one superhero to save us all and let's just do Aaron Eckhart. It's so dumb. And his whole stupid coin flipping gimmick. It's like, if you're going to have a second villain in this, it has to be somewhat comparable to the Joker. And you're just not going to get there. So just stop.
I mean, I get it. It is a very completely different character.
I don't like it.
Then you have someone who is going through an arc.
You know what? It's not a completely different character because it's someone who's driven to madness, who's an agent of chaos. Like, it is a similar kind of thing, but just done so much worse.
That's a good point.
Thank you. Bruce decides he's going to turn himself in and ask Harvey to hold a press conference. The only possible way to do that is for Harvey to hold the press conference. Anyway. Harvey then claims he is actually Batman. He's taken to Gotham Police vehicle, only to be chased by the Joker, and later helped out by Batman. Anyway, everyone's fine. Gordon is alive! So there was no point in killing him for fakesies. And they arrest the Joker.
Yeah, that would have been an easy thing to cut.
Remember the part where Harvey comes out of the courtroom and he's just saying some things and he points off screen for no reason and you predicted it?
I just have seen this movie a lot, so I just notice weird details in the film. Where are we at? This way?
Yep.
But wait! Harvey never arrives home. Batman goes all Jack Bauer on the Joker to find out where he is, and the Joker says you can only save one, Rachel or Harvey. Batman chooses Rachel and speeds off, except the Joker gave the opposite location because he's so chaotic. Rachel dies and Harvey lives with half a face. Not like around half a face.
Exactly half a face.
Exactly half of a face.
This is. I also agree about the grittiness. When they try to marry the realistic grittiness of comic book silliness, yeah. And it's like, what would be a real way he would just get his face burned off?
Exactly half a face.
Exactly half. Would get drenched in oil. None of his other body is fine, and he just refuses skin grafts, which he would not be able to live. But
that's like the opposite of what I thought of Dirty Dancing. I felt it was kind of grounded and real, but then when it got like just like romantic comedy or mushy, like I thought it blended beautifully. It's like the opposite of that.
It is.
People should say that more.
So this gets
the Dark Knight is the opposite of Dirty Dancing.
So this gets a little convoluted. There's an angry accountant at Wayne Enterprises who wanted to out Batman earlier. He shows up on the evening news and he's going to reveal Batman's identity. The Joker calls into the news show, tells him he doesn't want anyone knowing who Batman is. He threatens to blow up a hospital unless some good citizen just murders the accountant. God, this is silly. So someone tries. Bruce's expensive Lamborghini just stops it.
I gotta say, at a higher level, I agree it is silly, but it is really fun watching it just because it's fun to think about psychological experiments like this.
Yeah.
So if someone was a mass terrorist and they said, you gotta kill this one guy, you'd be like, would someone do it? Maybe.
You know what movie I think actually does a better job of that?
What's
is
that?
Die Hard 3.
No, I've never seen it.
You should watch it. It's good.
Where are we at here?
Yep.
The Joker visits Harvey, Two-Face Dent, at the hospital and gives
not
him the
face.
Push to madness. This is actually a really bad part of the film. Just his whole arc.
Yeah, like, it's so dumb.
I like the idea of it being in the movie, but it just doesn't work at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. The concept is good. The execution is poor, where he's just like, you just killed Rachel. He's like, okay, you want to kill me? Yes, I do, but I'll flip a coin.
You just don't,
I'm crazy.
You just don't believe he's on that arc to craziness.
No.
And like, Rachel dies and that's bad, but that's not enough.
No, you don't buy it at all.
Joker blows up the hospital because he makes the rules now. Harvey does some vigilante justice on the corrupt cops that led to Rachel's death.
The Joker gets ready for Batman by wiring a pair of fairies to blow up.
Which would take a lot of forethought, a lot of planning.
A lot of planning. Money, even.
Money.
One filled with good citizens, one filled with imprisoned criminals. Then gives the detonator for each fairy in the hands of the other, threatening to blow them both up if someone doesn't pull the trigger. The Batman bets otherwise, and he's right. After stopping the cops from inadvertently killing a separate group of innocent hostages, he subdues the Joker, and they both watch while neither fairy blows up. Which is so dumb.
It's not exactly the hero's journey, this story, is it?
No. I mean, it's just really stupid because I don't believe that the right thing to do is to not blow up the other fairy. Like, I don't think that's a proof of them being good people. I think they're kind of cowards. If I am on a fairy with my fucking children, as there were many families, yeah, I'm going to blow up the prisoner boat. And it's not because I'm a bad person. It's like, I'm just saying philosophy is more complicated than that. It's not a very good example of people being good that they were just too cowardly to blow up the other boat.
Can I do my bit I told you this morning?
You may.
I would just take the detonator right away and I would say, time to reduce their sentence. And then I'd blow it up.
I love that voice.
Which is my Joker voice.
You know, in 2018, it was announced that if they had hit the button, their own ship would blow up.
Because it's so near. That's pretty funny.
That makes a lot of sense. So it's like the same as the Rachel Harvey thing, where that makes sense. I like that.
Wait, what are you saying?
So the writer announced like in 2018 that, so say that the prisoners had hit the button, then the prisoner's ship would have blown up.
Oh, you mean that's just how they were? I thought you were saying the boats were so close together.
Oh,
just,
no,
it would
no.
have ignited the barrels anyway.
Oh, no, that... it would have been their own ship. So if they had chosen to...
Okay. Maybe if I was that scenario, I'd be like, oh, we can't really trust this detonator thing. That's fair.
Yeah, you're trusting that criminal pretty fast.
That's a good point. Okay. Huh. Now, let's really get into some philosophy. Anyway, Michael.
See, we don't have a soul because we're Madison. Madison is a soulless area.
Of course.
Meanwhile, Harvey has taken Jim Gordon's family hostage, leaving Batman to rush off once again and save the day. Save the day is such a funny phrase with this movie because it's like...
What you just said, like the fact that he went from the heroic DA to suddenly this crazy guy who put a gun to a child's head.
I like the idea.
I'm going to flip a coin as to whether I kill this child is so... you just don't buy it at all.
You know what? It might have worked if, like, obviously if they had written the story different or there are different details of his character or whatever. It might have worked if they just made the movie more dramatic. You know what I mean? If this was more not realistic, not great, if it was more comic book, he'd be like, oh, then I can kind of feel it just because it's an emotional
right.
film.
Or they could have just got to have this. It's done.
I guess there's a lot of options. In the ensuing scuffle, Harvey falls to his death and Batman saved Gordon's family. Unfortunately, word of Harvey's insanity will get out and all those criminals be put away, put back on the streets. Is that how lawyers work?
I know. Oh, I heard that guy was crazy and did some crimes. So all the lawyering he did makes all the criminals back on the street. That's a real line in the film. That's okay. There's only one way to stop that from happening. Batman takes the blame for Harvey's crimes. That leaves Harvey's prosecutions intact. Stupid. And the people of Gotham safe. Dumb.
Because he's the hero we don't need, but the one we deserve.
Wait, is that the other way around?
Now it's time to call our brother John for a segment we call Bro Call. Call Brother John.
Yeah, isn't it the hero we need, not the one we deserve?
I think in the movie they say it both ways.
Oh.
But I thought in the last final, the true one was, it's he's not the hero we need right now, but the hero we deserve.
John Flaherty.
Hello, John. This is Flaherty's on Films, and we're talking about the film The Dark Knight. Have you seen it? What do you think about it?
Well, I have seen it because I was the one who recommended it for the list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
Why did you recommend it?
What?
Why'd you recommend it?
Yeah, I didn't hear it.
Why did you recommend the film?
And this one I actually saw and loved. So there's two main reasons why I recommend it. One is AFI, you know, they do that thing with series where they'll only put one of the movies except for Godfather, but that's a different conversation. Like with the Return of the Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah.
And Star Wars. So I put it on there for the entire Batman trilogy.
This is the best one of those.
Well, yeah. So Batman Begins blew my mind when it came out in, what was it, 2005, I think? Because I was in college.
Yeah.
And I would argue pretty strongly that that's what started the modern superhero movie genre.
Not Spider-Man.
I would say Spider-Man, but we can agree to disagree.
Yeah, and some people would say Iron Man, which came later. Some people would even say the X-Men, but those people are wrong.
Oh, I forgot about X-Men.
I would definitely, comparing it to Spider-Man, I would definitely say that Batman Begins, and then obviously The Dark Knight, definitely defined a more serious tone for superhero movies, which is carried through.
Yeah.
So it kind of made it more realistic. Also, did these make more money? Correct. I don't need an answer to that question.
Yeah, just tell us your feelings.
Dark Knight is then amazing in its own right, and it's all because of Heath Ledger and his entire storyline, and that with, who plays Harvey Dent?
Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, Eckhart's storyline, I loved all of that. I just love moral ambiguity in movies, and just the character of the Joker and how well he's acted, just...
Harvey Dent was perfect.
Yeah, and Michelle is saying Harvey Dent was perfectly cast, which she's right about that.
Wow.
I failed to see, besides following the complexity of the Joker's insane plot, which was the point, I failed to see a flaw in the movie.
Any flaws at all. We found a bunch of flaws.
You're not going to
like it. Well, you guys are wrong, so let's discuss.
Yeah. Go ahead, Clay.
You could just listen to our podcast, but I just don't really agree with Christopher Nolan's, basically his whole philosophy, and I really just think the whole Two-Face thing is really dumb. I think it's
I didn't buy personally Aaron Eckhart's arc as a character at all. His driving to insanity, that felt silly.
I mean, he blamed the Batman for it, even though it was the Joker's thing.
It was just so dumb.
I'm okay with that.
I didn't buy.
I get the plot's explanation, but I just don't buy it.
Oh, I totally buy 100%. That would totally be me.
All right, fair enough.
Good to know.
Oh yeah, I'll totally. I'm definitely a push away from madness.
John, don't laugh like that.
Do you have any more feelings?
God, I should. I just love this movie so much.
We can reiterate that the Joker is very good, because that's just such a good part of the film.
Yeah, and you have to mention is some of it the fact that he died right before the premiere, like part of it, but I disagree. I think he's amazing in his own right, and that's just a masterful performance.
Definitely.
Especially contrasted with a Jack Nicholson Joker, who was like such a big deal back in the day, and Heath Ledger just blew him out of the fucking water.
I mean, yeah. It's just different things, I think.
But I mean, looking back on it, it's just so hokey and bad, and I thought it was so edgy when I saw the original Batman back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Are we anti-hokey?
Yeah, I'm pretty pro-hoke.
I can only barely hear Colleen, but yeah.
That's fine.
Hokey bad. I like this much more serious take. Though, of course, people have failed to do it since.
Yeah. What do you grade the film, John?
I'm going to grade it an A+.
A+. Wow.
Oh, and Michelle's reminding me what I was going to say, and then I went off on a tangent like I am known to do. Dark Knight Rises is much better than people give it credit for, just because it isn't as good as Dark Knight. What I did is, last time I watched these movies, I literally watched them back to back to back in a marathon, and Dark Knight Rises came off way better because of that.
Good to know.
There's a thematic undercurrent throughout all three movies that you don't really appreciate and see unless you marathon.
What's the theme?
I don't remember. I'm sure if I watched it again, I'd have it right at the top of my tongue.
Tip of my tongue.
Cool words.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also Tom Hardy rules.
Yes, very much so.
Michelle wants to know that I have a thing for Tom Hardy, and so it must be stated for the public.
As we close out, can you do a quick Bane impression?
You merely adopted the dog. I was born in it.
Very good. Well, John, we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Do you feel like his Bane impression is a bit like the Count from Sesame Street?
That's why I loved it. Colleen, what do you grade the film?
Bring me the Batman.
It's actually kind of like that. I mean, it's pretty camp.
By the way, Michael, you are 100% right. He's the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now, was the end credit. God, John is not going to like what I have to say about this film, because I feel like the undercurrent is that low-level criminals who live in poverty and probably don't have desperation should constantly live in fear so the rich can do better. And don't you dare vilify the rich, because then society will collapse.
Yeah. So you grade it low?
Okay. Well, despite all of my whining, I'm going to give it a solid B, because there are elements about it so good. And it is a very watchable film. Even though I do think the last half is so dumb. I mean, I was riveted. I was into it the whole time. And that counts a lot for me. And if I know you don't care about this, but I think it is a really good contender for the AFI.
Yeah, so. I don't care. Yeah, we did a lot of criticizing, but there is definitely a lot that I really, really do like. I mean, I like the no CGI approach. I like a lot of the scenes.
Very good action.
I don't feel like, I mean, maybe there was some CGI, but I felt like there was none.
Some of the sequences are just so masterfully done.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of modern action bores me, but even the whole car chasing scene and like down below, I liked the opening. I really liked all the action. Maybe the very end when he's beating up a dog. Like, all right, you can stop beating up a dog. But it's just gripping in the way it's shot. I really like the music. It's mostly just, it's just one note on an electric violin.
Which you're really into.
I actually kind of like it.
It's real ominous.
Yeah, actually it's pretty good.
If we were doing it on Heath Ledger's performance also. Again, cannot be said enough how good it was.
At one point, they get fingerprints from a bullet hole, which is A+. That's very good writing. So I do like the good actors in it. I mean, there is actually a lot that I do like, but yeah. I don't know.
It's always easier to nitpick than it is to say what you like about something.
I didn't feel the magic that I did back then.
For sure.
When I felt this originally, I just thought it was the greatest thing ever, but it's like, it's all right. So, but I will give it a B+. I think it is a very good film.
All right.
Yeah.
Who are we sponsored by this week?
Sponsored by Mounds Pet Store. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Mounds Pet Store.
Cool.
Tell us all about it.
They have really cool toys for your cat.
Like what?
Our Flair Design on Films now has a pet.
The podcast does.
The podcast. Her name is Crunchwrap, and she's orange, and she likes playing with little toys, and she likes She doesn't care for just any like cardboard box. No, sir. You have to get quality toys for Crunchwrap.
She has the normal cat features. Boxes. Probably laser pointers, I'd imagine.
Which I bet you can get at Mounds.
I bet probably.
Mounds Pet Food Warehouse.
Mounds Pet Food Warehouse. You can probably get a laser pointer. And now we're going to find out our next movie.
Yeah. All right. This is going to be a fun one. You
all right.
Ready?
Here we go.
And it is Stranger Than Fiction.
All right. Can't wait to have a blast next week on Flaherty on Films.
And stay tuned for a trailer for Stranger Than Fiction.
And cut.
I'm the assistant your publisher's hired.
The publishers think I have writer's block.
Do you have writer's block?
I don't know how to kill Harold or Crick.